Session number 13359, Mr. George Richardson, reel 22.
Mr. G.S. Richardson, reel 22. You're in this area for some time, Mr. Richardson, and pretty appalling conditions. What effect was this having upon the morale of the men and yourself?
Well, we were getting a bit fed up because we spent nearly, 2.5 months, probably nearly 3 months, in these dug-in positions. But we keep coming back to Nijmegen, which is a very nice town, and there was even a lot of courting going off with the Nijmegen girls, and when we were back there, we more or less had no duties to do when we were back in Nijmegen for a few days, but that was only while we were in reserve battalion, and then we moved forward again, another battalion would come back to Nijmegen. While we were running out these lines, we'd gone past this farmhouse a number of times, and we kept an eye on these six pigs that were running loose. Jeep driver and I went out, we laid our line, and we decided to come back. We'd put a large camouflage net on the wagon, and we went in and hauled all the six pigs out alive, and put them on the wagon, covered them over with the camouflage netting, and we had all six aboard, and then we told that girl with back to our own lines with the big screaming. This brought quite a lot of shellfire down, and for a little while, but not for long. The Germans wondered what was going off. They thought that there was a platoon of Germans, I think, going into action screaming. Anyway, we drove back into our own lines in this early morning light and bumped straight into our adjutant. What have you got there, Corporal? Six pigs, sir. What are you going to do with them? Eat them, sir. Take them up to the quartermaster. So we took them up to the quartermaster and we finished up with them. They shared them out around the battalion. Six quite large pigs, and everybody had a tasty, fresh pork dinner, and we got it ticking off for fetching six screaming pigs back, and we could have brought a major action on ourselves.
Were you getting any indication at this time that the division, battalion, brigade would be breaking up?
Well, there had been rumours for a week or two that we were being going to be pulled back. We had been given instructions, and we had done exercises of how to get back from the island across the River Meuse, I think they called it, the South Rhine. There was a Bailey Bridge which we were to use on foot. We had very little transport in front, just the POs and the signal wagon, company commanders, pickups. That was about the only transport we had in our lines. And we had a set routine task if we had to evacuate, because this area could be flooded. We knew that the dikes could easily be breached and the area could be flooded. It was absolutely flat Dutch country, and we knew what could happen. And so we had a plan to go back over foot or across the Bailey Bridge and leave the main bridge and the railway bridge alone. We did one or two exercises on this. Eventually we were told that we were going to be relieved that night. And that night the Germans laid down a Stuka raid and a heavy bombardment on the main bridge. And the main bridge was absolutely alive with troops. And they came into our positions. wagons, guns, huge soup kitchens, you name it, and it was the Americans. Probably full division moving into what we had two battalions position. And they moved in, and we moved back. They, we told them, okay, it's your lot, don't venture too far forward, and we marched out and back over the Bailey Bridge and into Nijmegen. And all that next day, there was strong action over the bridge area, over that area. They were being bombarded by German Air Force and long-range guns, and the Americans really had a bad time of it. We sat there for nearly 3 months of inaction, and in 2 or 3 days, they must have lost hundreds of men. The Germans had actually flooded parts of it. Some of their heavy equipment had probably bogged in, and why they'd gone in with all that amount of equipment when we had only been forward as light infantry equipment only, we'll never know, but they were a different army.
Were you tired at this time?
We were more or less war weary. The whole of the division, what was left of us, and we hadn't been reinforced for quite a long time now. We came back into Nijmegen and we were told to spit and polish up, to clean our equipment, and that we were going to be taken back into reserve army. The DLI band came up on the Sunday. We had a church parade, and the whole of the brigade that was left, we did a march past with as many of the dignitaries and our generals and brigadiers as possible, all assembled in Nijmegen. We did a march past of our brigade. It was a long time since we'd rattled along at 160 to the minute, but our DLI bards were fresh from Brantworth Castle, and they were rattling out the light bark, and we had to try and march past with our arms. And I suppose we put a decent show on, considering that we'd just come out of action. And then we were brought back from Nijmegen, and we were told, we came back into Belgium. I was sent up to a divisional headquarters to keep a guard over divisional stores in one large town. Pretty handy. I was billeted in with a Belgian family, no husband, just a housewife, and she used to pile the pancakes every night. And our job was to guard this huge warehouse of all brigade stores coming in, binoculars, field compasses, revolvers, all kinds of spare equipment from stores, and all that to be counted and stacked and checked in with quartermasters. We were there to guard it. We got quite a lot of free beer out of this, but it's another story.
So you'd ceased being a signaller at this time?
I was no more signaller. We were still with our battalion, but while I was out there for this, I think, 5 days, and then we were relieved, went back to battalion, then we were told that our battalion was breaking up. In fact, that the whole division were going back to England to train troops for Far East action.
What date was this?
Late November. We were, I was told that I'd be going back to 21st Army Group headquarters with the 21st Army Group headquarters defence company.
How did that affect you? How did you feel about that? The others were going home and you were going elsewhere?
I was told that Corporal Six Smith, Corporal Weir, and another two singlers that had been through right from the start of myself, were going back to England. I was probably disappointed. I was going back to do a job that I hadn't been trained to do, although I'd always done guard commander and guard duties. But we're going back to Royal Army headquarters, and I was sent back to Brussels. We were stationed in a large barracks that had been occupied by the SS, just off the Parc de Saint-Quentin, in the Académie de Saint-Quentin, military academy of the Belgian Army. And the 21st Army headquarters was actually in the palace in the main part of Brussels, the west part of Brussels, the best part of Brussels, not in the main town itself. Our duties there, we were in, I was in charge of a platoon of Durhams. I didn't have a sergeant. I was a senior corporal of the platoon. We only had two sergeants of the whole of the company. They were from other regiments. There was around about 230 strong, mostly from troops that had been in action. But there was only our platoon that were Durhams, that wore the Durham Light Infantry badge. We still wore our TT divisional badge, our Durham Light Infantry sign on our arm, my black hat badge and buttons, and we were given the cross swords in gold. That was a 21st Army headquarters sign. My address became Corporal Richardson, care of 21st Army headquarters, British Liberation Army. And our duties were to guard this palace, both at the main gate during the night, 12-man guard, guard commander, a corporal, and 12 private. Also, there was an 8-man guard which patrolled in pairs around the perimeter of this palace. There was two stood near the entrance, and the other four in turns, 2 hours on, 2 hours off, patrol mostly the car parks around the rear. Senior officers kept coming and going. We were told by our company commander, who wasn't a Durham Light Infantry man, I think he was from an Essex regiment, we were told that we only had to stand to attention when addressing officers, or if they addressed us. We didn't have to salute anybody when we were on guard, except to stand to attention when they passed us, anybody under the rank of major. Anybody over the rank of major, we gave a butt salute. We would only present arms if required to turn out the guard for generals. And our the 21st Army Group staff commander, Montgomery's staff commander, I forget what his name was, general, he was in command of us. We took our orders direct from him, and nobody else. There was all kinds of Royal Navy, Air Force, all kinds of officers came in. 1, 2, 3 star cars would drive up, would stop them at the gates during the day. During the night, they would all be stopped and had to get out and say who was in them. They had to pass it again to the palace at the main gate. Those that came round the rear gate were mostly working in the headquarters, all kinds of Royal Navy, Air Force, and staff officers. And they used to come and go. We used to recognise most of them by sight, and they knew us by sight because we were on guard there at least twice a week. We were on the main guard at least twice a week, and the other 2 or 3 days that we weren't on guard were more or less just polishing up, ready for guard. We also did maybe some hour or two guards drill. Probably the day before we were going to be on guard, the sergeant major of our company would have us out and do a little bit. Our drill had to be changed because I had been light infantry trained. I had to be trained as a heavy infantry, march at the with the shoulder arms. Slope arms instead of the shoulder arms. which we always did in the infantry. So our duty on the guard was marching through arms, although I had a pistol myself, so it was fairly easy to change over. But our infantry company, our infantry platoon of Durham's, were some days before the sergeant was shouting and bawling at them because they were marching too fast. They were marching when they were told to halt, they immediately come to standard A's, whereas they should have been standing with tension, because we've been trained that way for years, and that's the way we did in the light infantry. We stood at A's, we came from A's right the way through the positions, and then back to A's. But the heavy infantry and other regiments did it entirely different. So we had a few days of training before they became efficient to be seen outside the guards' entrance, the entrance into the main palace.
How long were you with them?
I was with them through Christmas period. Just before Christmas, I was given 7 days leave back to England. I was in charge of the party that take back. I've still got the embarkation warrant in me old paybook now. There was me, Lance Coble out of the Durham's, and the rest were mixed regiments. A party of eight of us went back, and I was in charge until I got back to England. I had to meet them in London and see that they got the boat train back to Brussels. And they all turned up. So I wasn't on the charge for anything like that. My duty is as guard commander, and during the night we're on our own. During the day we had military police at the gates. The guard were just ceremonial, marching up and down, just the way they do outside Buckingham Palace. If a staff car came up with General's stars on, then we'd usually the guard would usually stop it. The MP may go up to one side. If the guard called for the guard commander, if you suspected it was either the chief of staff or Montgomery, then he would shout the guard commander. I was called out. As a matter of fact, I was just outside the guard room when who I took to be Montgomery pulled up. The guard had stopped him. The military police was walking up, but the guard had already stopped him at one side. The driver had pulled his window down. I looked inside, recognised Montgomery, stood back, saluted, and said, OK, sir, you can pass through. He called me over. He says, who am I? I said, General Montgomery, sir. Probably Field Marshal Montgomery. He said, how do you know? I've seen you many times before. Where? Up in the line, in England, in the desert. I may not be General Montgomery, I may be somebody else. I said, I'm sorry, sir. In future, you ask for my pass. I've got a pass. And he pulled it out and showed me. I've got a pass. And he put it back in his pocket. And I said, well, it's the best bollock I've ever had. Sorry about that swear word. I've never been rolling by an army commander before, but I was that day. After Christmas, getting towards spring, the army was starting to move up to the Rhine crossing. The army went in and crossed over the Rhine a lot further down than Arnhem. After they'd crossed the Rhine, our chief of staff got a platoon of us together, a mixed platoon, and we went forward to a place called Zuchtelen, and we camped just outside of what was the Krankenhausen, a lunatic asylum, occupied by a lot of displaced Europeans. They all had little flags of origin, mostly Polish. They quickly sent, the Americans had captured this place. I'll not say that. There were quite a lot of imbeciles, mostly shell-shocked around. There was a big main hospital buildings, and there's other buildings that had been wards, and there was a big laundry and we took over these buildings. All the foreigners, not Germans, were taken out and taken into the nearby town of Zuchtellen and interviewed by our security and taken back into displaced persons camps. We had a job of spraying them with delousing powders and things like that as soon as we took over. We even had to be deloused ourselves because the whole place was absolutely filthy. We cleaned up the housing that we were going to take over as headquarters. The whole of the company moved up, and we took positions up outside of this camp, and we did patrols around the perimeter, and main headquarters moved up into this Frankenhausen with the chief of staff. Advance, 21st Army headquarters advance was always way up in front, and we always had communications between us and them, for I was in no, it wasn't in communications, I was in defence company. It was only rumours that we heard through road course signals that we messed with. And that was more or less what took us up into Germany. Then the army began advancing fast through Germany. The American sector was going to take over quite a large side of the southern parts of Germany. The British Army and the Canadian Army were moving up towards on the eastern side, on the other sides. Our chief of staff wanted a new headquarters, main headquarters, for then and future years to be in Hanover, in a large grammar school that I knew of. Apparently, in peacetime, he'd been to Hanover and he knew about this huge school. So he said that we'd go up there, and as soon as Hanover was captured, we would move into this school before the Americans got it. This was his words. He wanted that school as a new headquarters rather than the Americans take it over. We were in the American sector, and we advanced with a platoon of Durhams, motorborne, in one wagon, three armoured cars, and a scout car containing the chief of staff. We got about 8 or 9 kilometres outside of Hanover, and we stopped. We travelled a couple of 100 miles or so. We'd already camped one night in the rain, in hedgebacks, under greatcoats. Our greatcoats were saturated. The next day we moved on, and the radio told chief of staff that Hanover had been surrounded and captured. So he said, right, we're moving forward into Hanover to take over that school. We shouldn't meet any opposition. We moved about another kilometre up the road, main road into Hanover, when we were stopped by an American who asked where we're going. We told him Hanover. He said, I wouldn't go there. If I were you, there are Germans just up the road. Chief of staff says, right, Hanover's captured. We moved another kilometre and run into an ambush. We jumped off the wagon, immediately surrounded the position where the fire was coming from. The armoured cars took a firing position. The chief of staff come back a little, and we fought for about an hour. There were SS, I would say 18 or 20 SS in black uniforms. We were very close to them. We all had automatic weapons. They had Lugers and one or two automatic weapons, but not their machine gun. We fought for about an hour, and we captured about 8 of them. Killed the rest. I think there's about 4 of ours got killed. I got a slight one across my knee, just a scratch. I took one officer who looked like an SS captain. He was about 6'2". I had to reach up in his top pocket to take his watch off him. I took his Luger off him, and my revolver was stuck in his side right in the fire. But he came, and with his hands up, the chief of staff decided to call off going into Hanover. We took our wounded and dead back. We stopped overnight on the road back. We slept during the rain. I caught cold. I had a wound dressing over my knee. It wasn't all that bad, but it was an excuse to go back to medical treatment. We eventually made our way back to our main headquarters at Sukdalen, and I was sent back into an army hospital. I had bronchitis. I was in a couple of weeks in Eindhoven. Very nice conditions, being tread by both English and Dutch nurses. I even had some medical treatment, dental treatment on my teeth, because they had been suffering for quite a while. Then I was sent back to a holding unit, a convalescent unit, on the borders of Holland and Belgium. Just as we got to the border post, there was a red cap stopped us and told us that the war in Europe was over, and that Churchill was going to be speaking on the radio 3 o'clock that afternoon. We went into this place in Hasselt, a convalescent hospital, and we reported in. We were merely told that we were just to settle into our barracks. We had beds, blankets issued, and settled in, and after we'd had our lunch, we went on parade outside. Most of them were wounded men recovering from fighting, and I had recovered from bronchitis and just this slight wound. I felt a bit funny. I was probably the fittest one of all of them that were there. Anyway, we heard the broadcast from England. The war was over. Churchill thanked the whole of the 21st Army Group for doing a good job. We'd heard it all before. We all went out into Hasselt. Hasselt was celebrating. They brought the huge statue out in Hasselt called the Big Man of Hasselt. They had a big parade through the town with fireworks and wine flowing. We didn't have to pay for a thing. We celebrated. I spent 2 weeks there, then sent back home on convalescent leave.
What date would this be?
Do you know, I haven't got a clue. Well, we're into 1945 in May. In May. And we had 2 weeks convalescent leave back home.
Where was this?
I'd been sent to a holding unit over at on the Belgian coast, Ostend, just outside Ostend.
When you got to England, where were you staying?
I went home, and then I reported back to Ostend. I did a 5-day course on flamethrowers, something I'd never seen before. That's in my pay book, marked that passed on a flamethrower. And then we were taken to an Air Force base just outside Brussels, and flown back to England. We were joined an Essex regiment down in Sussex, a large park, and there was quite a few Durhams that come all back at the same time, some from the 9th Battalion and some from our own unit. Mostly from the 9th Battalion that had been wounded and come back into this holding unit. We finished up back in this, and they paraded us the next morning and gave us our new badges to wear. We had a meeting. I was the senior NCO, and we said, no, we've fought a war. The war's over in Europe. We've worn our Durham Active Infantry badges through thick and thin. We're not going to change. was going to look like it was all being shot for mutiny. We went up to Battalion headquarters. No, sorry, company headquarters, and Overton. Company headquarters, and we saw the officer, and he had new orders through, unknown to us. These were training for the Far East, a training unit, and they were mostly in this company were unblooded troops. They'd never seen action before, and we were the only ones that had that come in this to join them. So the company commander heard we're out to say that we'd been through thick and thin. I wanted to go back to my own unit, if possible. That fighting up in the 9th Battalion up there. I don't know where the 6th Battalion are, but if possible, I would like to rejoin Montgomery's headquarters, where I've come from. I saw no reason why I should take over another barge at this stage of the war. And he said, well, I've got some news for you. We've had orders that you're going to go back where there is some discipline. We're going to send you back to the Durham Light Infantry, who are training for the Far East in England. And we're finished up with the 6th Battalion in Skipton.